You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Holy Crowley Hour.
Okay, boys and girls, let's go! Ow. We're all right. Another wretched morning, a wretched October day. No sound of angels in the trees. Christmas is far away. Yeah, listen, what's this? But then a voice starts whipping round, the vision comes to play. And this is what the voice declaims. It's Tomega Therion's birthday. Don't give us no facts, we'll kick your ass. We're the heralds of Crowley Mass.
Good evening. And welcome to the special August edition of the Holy Crowley Hour, the radio show that refuses to take a summer vacation. Right about now, you might be wondering, why don't they take a summer vacation? They could use it, maybe extend it a few months. Well, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that and instead answer the question we answer every show, what is the Holy Crowley Hour? Sometime several years ago, a KBOO talk show caller made an accusation. She claimed that there were several late-night DJs at the station who belonged to an Aleister Crowley cult. Aleister Crowley, for those of you who don't know, was a remarkable Englishman who lived from 1875 to 1947. He founded the religion of Thelema and styled himself a prophet leading humanity into a new age of self-realization. He was also accused by some of being a Satanist, and the press at the time denounced him as the wickedest man in the world. Those were more innocent times. Now back to that KBOO caller. In her defense, she was partly right. Many of our late-night DJs, myself included, are members of a cult, and this cult is led by a Crowley. However, it's not the cult led by Aleister Crowley. Rather, it's the one led by his brother, Carl. Carl Crowley. Carl is Aleister's little-known brother, and that's just the way he wants it. You're probably wondering by now, is there any difference between the two Crowley cults? Yes, there are some major differences. For instance, Aleister Crowley's cult has but one commandment, do what thou wilt. Carl Crowley's cult also has but one commandment, do what I tell you. And that's the commandment we follow here on the Holy Crowley Hour. Whatever Carl tells me to say and play on the show, well, that's what I say and play. I do what I'm told and have no voice in what you're about to hear. The programming is under Carl's complete control. However, I will say it's fortunate for you, the listener, that Carl Crowley has impeccable taste. I'll be playing radio theater, podcast, comedy, novelty bits, and a few tunes guaranteed to entertain and enlighten, which is a whole lot better than I can say for some cults that have absolutely no sense of taste, like the cult led by White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow. If I were a follower of that cult, instead of radio nuggets tonight, you might be listening to a trade war between China and our neighboring station, OPB. From all reports, the OPB show Think Out Loud was getting hammered in the ratings by the People's Farm Report. To address the problem, Kudlow suggested imposing tariffs on the Chinese broadcasting system, CBS. Think Out Loud host Dave Miller acknowledged that the trade war will hurt listeners, but he said, we all just have to accept the pain that comes with standing up to superior programming. Hey, added Miller, you won't hear Joey Gibson on the People's Farm Report. So stick around for another exciting episode of the Holy Crowley Hour, where the tariffs are as low as the comedy.
And there ain't no grace, there ain't no guilt. See the Lord, do what thou wilt. And his name is Crowley, it rhymes with holy. It isn't Crowley, that rhymes with Crowley.
You're listening to the Holy Crowley Hour, the radio show for people who listen at the speed of sound. No surprise that radio is our favorite medium here on the Holy Crowley Hour, and it's called a medium because, to paraphrase Ernie Kovacs, it's neither rare nor well done. Ernie was actually talking about the early days of television, but he could have easily been describing this show. At one time, however, radio was our nation's primary medium, and all kidding aside, it was very well done. Here to take us back in time to that golden age are tonight's guests, Dennis and Rhonda Wright. Dennis and Rhonda are the folks behind the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum in Sutherland, Oregon. The museum celebrates the history of radio through the display of memorabilia from that time and an archive of original broadcasts. Rhonda and Dennis, thanks so much for joining us on the Holy Crowley Hour.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Ken, for having us. Yeah,
nice to be here.
Now, Dennis, first I have to say it was such a joy preparing for our interview. I got to view several of the museum's exhibits on your website and your Facebook page, and I learned a great deal about a time that's been an inspiration for me, as well as those in the radio theater community here in Portland. But before we get into the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum itself, the question on my mind, and probably many of our listeners, why Sutherland, Oregon?
It's funny. We have three main, I'll answer your question in a minute, but we have three main questions everybody asks. And that's one of the questions is, we were just talking about that, my wife and I last night, is why Sutherland? The reason why, there's others, we live there, and the rent's cheap. So that's kind of why we're there. So,
and I read that you lived in Michigan as a teenager and worked part-time in your dad's dairy farm.
Yeah.
Was that how you discovered old-time
radio?
Well,
it wasn't my dad's dairy farm. My dad was worked for the city of Hillsdale at the time, but that's in southern Michigan. No, I worked at a dairy farm, and as a 16-year-old kid, I got tired of Top 40 radio. You know, you're milking cows in the middle of the night, and you need some entertainment to keep you awake. So I was turning the dial, and I found some old radio reruns on some station there.
Wow, and, was that a local station or coming from far away, like
Chicago?
It could have been
probably coming from far away. Uh-huh. I don't think, imagine anything local would be playing old-time radio shows,
right,
especially that late at night.
Right.
So the first show I remember listening to was The Hitchhiker with Suspense, with Orson Welles.
Uh-huh.
And that got me hooked. I've been hooked ever since. That was a night, that was probably in the early 70s, so I can't go back.
Were some of those other shows that got you hooked? There was The Hitchhiker, of course, and Orson Welles was the narrator of that one?
Orson Welles was the narrator and the protagonist of the show, and the other ones that got me hooked was The Shadow, of course, The Lone Ranger. I love The Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger is probably my number one favorite, all-time favorite program. Suspense, Escape, Fimbergy and Molly, Abbott Costello, they're all just wonderful. And if I was to pick one, if I was to go on a deserted island somewhere and they say you can only take one with you, it'd probably be the Lone Ranger.
Now, you didn't just listen, though. You also started collecting the original broadcasts and memorabilia from that era. How did that happen?
I mean,
you were listening late night on these radio shows, and then you got hooked. And what got you interested in the memorabilia side of it?
The memorabilia came later on. I started collecting the actual shows. Back in them days, you had a few choices, your limited choices. You had records, LPs. A few companies produced these records. You got two shows, one on each side usually, and they also had them on cassette. And also, you can get them on reel-to-reel, which we didn't have a reel-to-reel deck back then. We had a cassette of records, or even 8-track, which I have abundance of 8-track old-time radio shows in the museum, too. But records was my favorite format to collect them with.
And those were the LPs,
the
33 and a 30.
And they're great artwork on them. We have some of those displayed inside the museum. Tom Mix, Straight Arrows, just the Dragnets. They're all beautiful artwork on these album covers. And then I got into collecting the pictures. So I thought, who's behind the microphone? Who's out there? What does Abbott Costello look like? What does Fimbergy and Molly look like? What does the Lone Ranger look like? So I started collecting all these pictures, and I got a gazillion of them. And
photographs, right?
Photographs, there, so, yeah. Photographs with them behind the microphone. And, they're all publicity stills, obviously. And then, I have an abundance of those, and they're great to have. People recognize it. They say, and I have them all labeled, and they'll say, oh, that's what Amos Nettie looks like, or that's what Fimbergy and Molly look like, or so they can put in their head what they sound like on the radio.
Well, Amos and Andy was an interesting case because they were two white guys, and when they took promotional photographs, they wore blackface a lot of times.
Yes,
yeah.
I do have some. The one I have on my display is Amos and Andy without the blackface. They're just behind the microphone. But I have a studio one in the museum where they're just sitting at a table, and you can see them acting because they're, you know, they have facial expressions or whatever that they're getting into it. And that's a really cool picture.
Now, was starting a museum devoted to the golden age of radio always on your mind once you started collecting the photographs, the records, the memorabilia?
That's a good question. What happened is I'm in healthcare. That's my occupation is I'm a med tech at a retirement assisted living in Roseburg. And so I take care of the people that lived this era. And they were children at the time these shows were on the air. I mean, we were talking, you know, 80-year-olds or 90-year-old women and men that they listened to this. They, you know, brings back a lot of memories. So
radio in the 30s and 40s when they were kids, and it was one of those scenes where they're in front of this big radio set on the living room floor the evening. And
One of my clients I had, he vividly remembered, you know, listening to, sticking his head almost in the speaker as a kid, laying on the floor listening to Jack Armstrong, the All American Boy, and that's how, you know, just brings back a lot of memories for them. So that's what kind of got me started with the museum part, because I would bring the stuff to them to show them. I'd bring them the memorabilia and say, do you remember this? Do you remember Dick Tracy, the Secret Service Club, or do you remember Lone Ranger Safety Club? And they, you know, yeah, and they were real enthusiastic. And then I did Fred Crafts and Radio Redux in Eugene. So we met Fred, and we do exhibits there when they have Radio Redux at the Holt Center. First, we started at the Wallace Theater in Springfield. They moved. We must have been with Fred now for at least seven years now, and he's been doing it for 10. So we've had a lot of exposure. And then during that time, before we did our museum, the Springfield Museum in Springfield, Oregon, asked us to do an exhibit there, and we did it for 2 months, and we had a great turnout, and people were receptive to it, and we had all of our stuff in there. And they said it was the largest private collection ever exhibit at the Springfield Museum.
Wow, and that's a general museum, right?
It's
Springfield history. Museum, yeah. So not just radio. This was specifically a radio exhibit in a more generalized museum.
Right, yeah. And then after that was real successful. Then after that, we went to the Oregon Air and Space Museum in Eugene and did a similar thing for a couple months there. We just had, I had all the stuff, you know, because, you know, aviation, old-time radio, big band, all that stuff was kind of all at one, you know, golden age of Hollywood was all in one time period. That was just an era that we'll never get that back. So, but aviation and old time radio kind of goes together. And so we did that for a couple months, and then we had an opportunity to, in Sutherland, we had to move out of our house, actually, is what we were doing. And we said, well, what about starting a museum? So we did. And,
really, that just kind of came out of thin air.
Yeah, pretty much thin air. Yeah, I call places. I call other museums. You know, I call other museums on the East Coast or whatever, and they say, "Well, we're still in the planning stages. You know, we've been doing this we got a board. We've been meeting for 10 years. We haven't really got anything. We haven't got anywhere with it." So I said, "I'm the guy. So I'm just going to do it." And I contacted the owner of this beautiful brick building there in Sutherland. It's built in 1916. We only have 4 original buildings in all of Sutherland, and we're in one of them. And it's really cool to be there.
That's about the birth of commercial radio,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
In the US,
1916, yeah, exactly. 1916, around the birth of commercial radio, yeah.
And Rhonda, let's get to you. I wanted to ask about your fascination and addiction, possibly, to old-time radio. What got you hooked? Did you start listening as a kid also on those faraway AM stations?
No. My husband is the one who got me hooked on old-time radio. I had never been exposed to it before in my life. So when he got me hooked on it, I didn't really understand, you know, where it would, anything about old-time radio. Or never heard any old time radio shows, so he would let me listen to. Well, at first he would listen to all like Lone Ranger, Going to Sleep, and I said I cannot go to sleep to Shoot 'Em Up, Bang Bang. I just couldn't. I couldn't go to sleep to that. And then I started getting because you just get hooked, and it was really hard to just to go to sleep. And I said, okay, well.
So rather it's than good. Asking him to not play it right. before bedtime, you just went along with it and
listening
started listening
to it. Yes.
Stayed up for a half hour later.
Yes. Yeah.
So The Lone Ranger was about one of the first shows you started listening to. What do you remember some of the early shows that Dennis introduced you to that you were particularly attracted to?
The shows from The Lone Ranger?
Oh, or no, just any old-time radio
Abbott and Costello.
Show. Oh, comedy shows. Uh-huh.
Superman. We took a trip with our kids to California, and the Superman was the longest running. We listened to it one program the whole time.
So several episodes from the Superman.
39
episodes.
Wow.
Superman. And the kids really enjoyed it, too. It kept them occupied. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great to know that it, people who have not grown up with radio, well, I love it, and I didn't grow up with radio as the primary medium. With me, it was television, of course. And now with younger kids, it's the internet. But podcasts, I think, are bringing it back. Mm-hmm. So I want to get to the name of the museum, refer to radio as theater of the mind. What do you mean by that? And is that something that radio does better than any other medium, such as TV, the things we grew up with, or film?
Well, for me, I work in the school district, and I work with children who, it's all about internet and YouTube. And so last summer, we did a field trip this in the summertime. The kids came down to our museum, and I was able to introduce them. So it's ages kindergarten to sixth grade.
Wow.
And I was able to talk to them about... This was before TV, before internet, radio, and introduced them to what was before. This is what kids did. They listened to radio.
What was the reaction?
Oh, they just loved it. They hands-on, they were able to, to really explore the museum and the shadow and Frontier Town. That was one of the most amazing things to them, is that they were able to touch and take themselves back to that time.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because when I prepared for the interview, you mentioned that was one of the rarest pieces of memorabilia. It was something given away by Cheerios associated with the Lone Ranger radio program.
Yeah, last year, 2018, was the 75th anniversary of the Lone Ranger. I don't remember what year actually was.
But started somewhere around...
1933.
Okay.
So the 85th
anniversary. 85th, yeah.
We decided to celebrate the Lone Ranger in the museum, so we had a kind of a birthday celebration of the creation of the Lone Ranger at the museum. We invited people of the community to come over. We had a really good turnout, and then we had the Lone Ranger exhibit. Part of that was the Lone Ranger Frontier Town, and most of half of it, or at least a third of it, came from the back of the Cheerio boxes. So you go buy a box of Cheerios and you cut out parts of the town, the little cardboard buildings. And
so it's like a cardboard diorama that you're putting together from multiple boxes of Cheerios.
There was nine boxes of cereal that you had to have to complete the set. But that wasn't a complete even. You had to send in, I think it was maybe a dime or a quarter for more, and they would give you, these section maps. You have four maps. It would be the northeast, southeast, the northwest, and the northwest and the southwest.
And this is a town where the Lone Ranger lived. Most of the stories took place in this.
Correct, around the Lone Ranger Frontier Town. And so they had those buildings, railroad, all this stuff was all right there. It's just really a cool little thing. So it's about 15 square feet when it's all laid out and put together. So we have that, and that was real exciting. So I'm missing, even though... It is rare. It's very rare. And I called around to different places. There's one complete set. They enlarged the set. And that's in the Waco, the Texas Ranger Museum in Waco, Texas.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yes, the Texas Ranger Museum. And there's a museum in somewhere back east that had another set on exhibit. But I don't know if they took it down. A friend of mine that I just recently got acquainted with, they're doing Brace Beamer was the guy that played the radio Lone Ranger in the latter parts of the show about 15 years ago.
Oh, he wasn't the first radio Lone Ranger.
No, he was the last. And he's the one with the big booming voice, too. Mm-hmm. Iowa Silver, and so that was him. And even on the TV, they used him at the beginning of the show. And then
Clayton Moore.
Clayton Moore played the Lone Ranger on TV. Then John Hart was the other Lone Ranger when they had a contract dispute with Clayton Moore. So he just wanted more money, and he got it. So I guess the fans weren't happy with John, and Clayton Moore got to come back. But the Lone Ranger Frontier Town is, like I said, is made of cardboard. These were really meticulous. I mean, the kids who built this, we bought them complete. I didn't put anything together. But some kid put this thing together. But I bought them from multiple sources. So I didn't have one place to get all of them. So I had to buy, this amount of buildings or this amount of the backs to the cereal boxes, or I bought this panel from that person or this panel from, still it takes a long time to get the whole set going.
So this was difficult to put together.
Yes. And
was it expensive? These are rare items, I guess.
They're very rare items. Right now they're... I'm missing two buildings. I just bought 100 buildings recently, around the first part of June. But the only thing I got out of the 100 buildings was one piece that we were missing off the set. So
oh, no.
A lot of these were duplicates.
Uh-huh.
But what we decided to do was have the museum, Lone Ranger Frontier Town. So we're going to have another one when we do our traveling time machine exhibit. So we're going to have another
set. So the duplicates will come in handy.
Yeah, so the duplicates will come in handy eventually. Yeah.
Now let's talk about some of the other items in there. I told you before the interview that there were two in particular that struck me when I was looking on the website and the Facebook page. The first was the Charlie McCarthy dummy. For those of you who don't know, Charlie McCarthy was a ventriloquist dummy, voiced by probably the worst ventriloquist in history, Edgar Bergen, so he was perfect for the radio. I mean, his timing was perfect, his content, but he moved his lips,
yeah.
which is generally toxic for a ventriloquist, but on the radio, nobody knew.
On the radio, nobody knew. Charlie McCarthy was a unique character. It wasn't that Edgar Bergen was a ventriloquist, it was that Charlie McCarthy came alive on radio. So you could never do that on TV or in the movies. But Charlie McCarthy was a live, living character on the radio via Edgar Bergen's voice.
Edgar Bergen's voice alone, but people didn't know that.
No.
Or people assumed it was Charlie McCarthy a real character.
Yeah.
Was that an original Edgar Bergen dummy, or was it a toy at the time?
No, they had these. Throughout the years, they had different ones you could buy. I'm not sure when that one came from. But what I also have on display at the museum is Edgar Bergen. It's an LP record. It's got a picture of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, and Mortimer Snerd, which is another character that Edgar Bergen did. And he was kind of a slower kind of a character. I can't really describe who would be in the same vein as Mortimer Snerd. Kind of a slow talker, maybe kind of hillbilly from the South. There was another ventriloquist woman, girl, that was also part of the Edgar Bergen's creations. But the Charlie McCarthy, they have a record, and it's a cover is him and Mortimer Snerd and Edgar Bergen, and it's him giving ventriloquist lessons on this LP. So that's pretty cool. I don't think anybody would be able to find one of them.
So. Now, the other item I was talking about was this Abbott and Costello figurine. They were dressed in their baseball outfits for the Who's on First routine, and they actually recite over the course of about 4 or 5 minutes the entire Who's on First routine through this amazing technology, and I read this on your website, that was called synchro motion.
Yes.
Can you describe that and how you got a hold of that?
Yeah, you think about, if you remember the Abraham Lincoln at Disneyland.
Animatronics, yes.
Yeah, animatronics. So this is kind of similar, but these, Abbott Costello is probably about 12 or 13 inches tall, and there's the two of them there, and they're voicing the script. You still hear the background laughter of the audience or participation, but they're voicing the script. They're moving their arms. They're just their arms and their heads move, and they speak in unison with the speech. But it is funny. I mean, I've listened to Abbott Costello, Who's on First, probably a gazillion times.
It's probably the most famous vaudeville routine ever.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, what year was that synchro motion figurine from?
Maybe the 80s. Somewhere in the 80s.
1980s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or 90s, I'm not really sure.
So it was way after the audio animatronics. I thought it was kind of an early technology in the radio days. But
no, it's all digital. There's a volume control on there. So it's,
And I had to mention at least one more piece of memorabilia, because this was made famous by the holiday classic A Christmas Story, and this is the Little Orphan Annie Dakota ring, which Ralphie in the movie was very happy to get, and then discovered Ovaltine pulled the wool over his eyes. Yeah. And you have a series. I read on your website that that wasn't the really big acquisition for you. It was a Captain Midnight Dakota ring.
I have all the decoders from Little Orphan Annie and Captain Midnight, and it's part of the collection at the museum. But they're all cool. I mean, they're just unique. They're beautifully done. I mean, you think about the kids back in them days, how lucky they were to have this stuff available to them. And, the depression was going on, obviously, so it was a little probably hard for money. But you talk about 10 cents or a quarter for some of this stuff. And you say for the Ovaltine, you had to send in the lid. There's a liner inside the lid of a jar of Ovaltine, and you send that in for your decoder, whatever it was. So I have all of them from... Little Orphan Annie was on the air from over there for the decoders, or the club. Little Orphan Annie Radio was from 1934 to 1940, and that's the one that Ralphie's featured with on at the Christmas Story. It was 1940. Then after 1940, Ovaltine dropped Little Orphan Annie and picked up Captain Midnight, went national, and then that's what then I got all of them decoders.
Oh, so Ovaltine was the connection there.
Yes.
Not only did they give you this delicious chocolate hot beverage, but they gave you a decoder ring, too.
Or
10 cents at the time, which is probably about $1 million in current.
Well, there's tons.
The Depression, 10 cents was a lot.
A lot of money, yeah. It's kind of funny, though, because, the 1935 is when they started actually making the decoders. And then that was just a little disc. A decoder disc. They got more ornate as the years went along. The 1937 one, 1938, beautifully done. And the 1936 one has a little secret compartment on the back of it, and it's kind of cool. But the 1940 one is the last one they did for Little Orphan Annie, and that's the one that Ralphie used. It's a spin dial, so you have so a lot of those are broke, and they're really rare. So the 1935 ones are pretty common, 1935 on up to 1939, but the 1940 ones, for some reason, from the Christmas Story, they're very rare and hard to find, and they're pretty expensive. So we have all the manuals. They came with a manual for the club to learn how to do the secret handshakes and their secret gestures or whatever it was, and their knocks, and kind of similar to what you might imagine, like the Masons or, something like that, some secret society. That's what the order the kids were getting into.
And the secret answer to the riddle was not always drink Ovaltine.
Yes.
It wasn't a movie.
Stay tuned. They'd give you a little preview of what the next show was, which is usually the following day.
Rhonda, do you have any favorite exhibits at the museum? Or maybe when you brought the kids around, was there something that really struck them?
Well, the Frontier Town is one of the favorites. It wasn't my favorite at first because we had to take it to the Holt Center as an exhibit, part of our exhibit, and it's really big. It's
15
huge.
15 square feet.
It's huge. Yeah. And Dennis and I take all these things together, just the two of us, and hauling all this around is quite a chore, but it's so rewarding to see other people enjoy all the pieces that we have to offer. So,
now speaking of that, we're recording in advance. This will be aired in August, but right now it is late June, and you're in Portland now from Sutherland to be at the Tesla City Story Show tonight at the old church in downtown Portland. They perform old-time radio scripts live on stage, just as they did 70 years ago in front of the mics, holding their scripts with sound effects and commercials thrown in. What are you bringing for the show? And I know you were there in March, too. How did the audience react to that when they came by?
They loved it. And my goal is to bring you have new audiences, a new audience appreciation for a drama, old-time radio drama. Tesla Stories does a remarkable job. They're just great. And so I kind of met them by through their website, through... Sam Mowry.
Oh, yes.
So I posted the museum on Sam's on the When I'm Radio Workshop, and then Jason. There was a few of them started to comment about it, like, wow.
Our producer, Jason Harder.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, they got into it, and they thought, wow, that's really cool. So I contacted Jason, and I said, well, we're doing this thing at the Radio Redux with Fred Crafts, and we'd like to do something similar to what you have. So they said, yeah, sure. So we went up there, and it was great. People loved it. And we're back again for this particular show.
What are you bringing tonight?
The theme is some king of mystery detective thing.
It's a Russian spy story. It's called I'm Not Stalin or something. Osprey something. I don't have that information, but yeah.
So what we did is we brought in some Dick Tracy, Secret Service Patrol, and Melvin Purvis, Jr. G-Man, and spy one, and so yeah, it's all, you know, the shadow.
In fitting with the theme.
Dragnets, it's all, you know, all right there.
So. Ah. Mm-hmm. Now, old-time radio, of course, is not just for people who grew up with it, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. You've got this new audience at Tesla City. You've got the kids, Rhonda, right, who are enjoying it. Are there any recent radio theater or audio dramas that you listen to? I think, actually, a lot of podcasts now, of course, their stories told entirely through sound. So their legacy and their inspiration really is that old-time radio, the golden age.
I'm fond of anything. Anybody that's doing anything to promote radio drama, I'm in it. You know, like there's the religious one. That's can't think of who that does now. Focused on the Family does the one.
Adventures in Odyssey.
And that's been around for a long time. They're doing audio drama. There's the lots and lots of different ones out there. But there's also, besides Tesla Radio Stories or Fred Crafts Radio Redux, there's other groups out there in around the United States that do these as well. And they're kind of fun. I mean, you listen to, so we've been with Fred Crafts Radio Redux for a long time, and the professionalism just comes across. You know, we got to experience them in the beginning, and then as they progress yearly, they've gotten better and better and better. It's like, then you compare them to other people, and like, you know, so.
Now, where did they get their scripts? Are those originals, or are
yeah,
those?
Yeah, Fred used a lot of, Fred Crafts Radio Redux used a lot of his originals, a lot of original shows, but he'll maybe edit them for local flavor or you know, time constraints. Or on that one show he did recently, I think he combined the script of radio and television to kind of make more meaningful.
Do you remember what that was?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, okay. There's another group in town called Fake Radio, and they do two or three shows a year. And the last one they did was about a month or so ago. It was celebrating the 70th anniversary of Dragnet with Jack Webb. And I noticed in one of the articles in one of the local papers in the Roseburg area, there was a Jack Webb show that he did before Dragnet. The show, I just looked it up, Pat Novak for Hire, which there's a Monday show, Monday afternoon show on cable called Monday Sampler, and they were playing Pat Novak for Hire several episodes. From a complete, several segments of a complete episode. And I got to say, that's one of the worst radio shows I've ever heard. It was, he really struck gold with Dragnet, but Pat Novak for Hire was some of the worst written. I wonder if they were purposely playing it for last because they have these awful similes, you know, based on Raymond Chandler and those mystery writers. They were just ridiculous. I'm sorry I don't have an example here, but I've tried to wipe it out of my mind. You know, it was traumatic.
There are differences. You know, the radio, back in the original days, you have some really good top-notch shows, and you have some that are kind of, like television today. You have good scripts and you have bad scripts. You have good series and bad series. So there's taste for everybody. You know, you listen to some of the kids' program, which there's a couple in particular children's programs of the era. There's one called Speed Gibson, the International Secret Police.
I don't know that.
Beautiful. I mean, the kid's a kid. He's joined Secret Police. His uncle, Clint Barlow, he's the head of the Secret Police. And they travel the world looking for this guy, the bad guy called the Octopus. And it's just thrilling, well done drama radio, and for the kids. And that's who it was. That was their target audience, with children. And So then you have other ones like, you know, Captain Midnight was kind of the same day. You know, Captain Midnight was looking for this guy named the Shark.
And there were some of the Space Patrol and Space some of those.
Space Patrol right now, besides Lone Ranger, is probably my second favorite program next to maybe the Speed Gibson International Secret Police, as I just mentioned. But Space Patrol is another one. You really get into it. You could be there. I mean, the space, you're there in space. You're in their spaceship. You can't do that with TV. Our book.
You know, along those lines, I looked up a few quotes on radio, and there's one from Harry Von Zell, who was a well-known radio announcer. He was later a TV actor on the Burns and Allen show. He was actually on the show as an actor. He said, radio is the most intimate and socially personal medium in the world. I've actually heard that from cable listeners when they talk about why they listen to radio and like it. Why do you think that is? Is it just the power of the human voice when there's nothing else going on, there's nothing really to watch, there's nothing else to kind of take away from what's happening in your head, your imagination at the time?
Well, I think it's the familiarity, because you're, like Gunsmoke is an example. So you have the same characters every week it's the same characters. You have William Conrad playing Marshall Dillon. You have Parley Bear, he played the barber in, no, that was Floyd the Barber.
Oh, yes, in the Andy Griffith Show. A very unique voice.
Yeah, that was Chester Proudfoot. Then that Doc Adams was another character, and you had Kitty on the radio. Totally different than the television. But you get Jack Benny, all these recurring characters, you get to know them on a personal level. You know their thoughts and how, and their responses to things and their likes and dislikes, and that's what plays a part of that.
But you do that with a TV sitcom too. So what sets radio apart? Is it the fact that it's the characterization, or is it really coming through sound alone, which is again something you're on TV? Of course, you're getting the visual and the audio.
Part of the sound alone, because the sound alone is what transports you. You're an active participant. You're there in the living room. You know, you're walking down to the vault for Jack Benny to get his money. So you're not watching that. You're not watching it. You're there.
It's also that vault probably looks different in everybody's mind.
Yes.
Right.
Well, if it was a TV show, it would look exactly the same as what you're seeing on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your mind, that I think to me that's what makes it more personal.
Yes.
The name of our museum is the Radio Days Theater, the Mind Museum. Mm-hmm. I really struggled for when we first opened, before we opened, to what to call the place. But Theater of the Mind really kind of stuck out. And so that's what we want to celebrate that. That's what we're kind of there for. You know, we have all the stuff that the kids would use or send in for.
Oh, you've got to blow the whistle for us and tell us where you got that.
This is my my first, as a collector, my first radio premium. So you listen to these commercials on the radio shows, and I got, this was after the internet, so you got eBay and whatever, you know, Amazon, Google, so you're able to search for these things. So I found this, listening to the radio show, it was a police whistle advertised on the radio.
Sergeant Preston.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought to myself, I wonder if these are available out there. And then sure enough, this was, and I bought it. And this was the first one to add it to the start of my collection of radio shows. This is a gold-plated police whistle, and it's got two tones. I'll blow it here real quick. And so I think it was like 35 cents at a box top.
Which was a lot of money then, of course.
This was the 1950s. So it was,
1950s.
Yeah, early 50s. So it was well worth it. This thing is really heavy-duty, gold-plated. I'm sure it's on the gold-plated.
It doesn't look like the kind of things you find in a Cracker Jack box.
No,
plastic.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell our listeners how to find out more about the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum and visit you in person next time they're in the Sutherland area and maybe support your efforts to preserve this very important piece of our history?
Yes, we have. We're the thing about Sutherland is that we're downtown. We have no foot traffic. I mean, people don't just go. People in Sutherland don't go to the museum just for that. Oh, let's go. But we do have. We're along I-5, which is kind of cool. So if you're heading south to California or southern Oregon, if you're going to Ashland or Medford,
right, it's just north of Roseburg.
We're north of Roseburg, and it's an easy turn off. We're right downtown. It's about maybe 2 miles from the exit.
It's Central Avenue there.
On Central Avenue. So it's a well, beautiful building. It's all brick, like I said, made 1916. And we got lots and lots of stuff in there to see.
And they could become members. Do you still have a GoFundMe? I read that.
Yes, we have a GoFundMe account on the. I think it's on. It might be on the webpage. That's at RadioDaysMuseum.com. We also have a Facebook. I think it's posted on the Facebook as well.
Well, Dennis and Rhonda Wright, thanks again for talking with us tonight. And a big Holy Crowley Hour thank you for keeping the spirit of terrestrial radio alive in the age of extraterrestrial entertainment.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for letting us be here.
To follow our talk with Dennis and Rhonda, we'd love to transport you all now to their Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum in Sutherland, Oregon, but we can't because you're in your pajamas and Sutherland has a very strict dress code. So we'll do the next best thing. If we can't transport you physically, we can transport you audibly. Back to the early days of radio, to the year 1937, January 2nd, 1937 to be precise, for the premiere of the very popular weekly program, Speed Gibson of the International Secret Police, which just happens to be one of Dennis Wright's favorite old-time radio shows, right up there with The Lone Ranger. This episode is titled, awkwardly enough, The Octopus Gang Active. By the way, that is Howard McNear, who you might know as Floyd the Barber from the Andy Griffith TV show, playing Speed Gibson's uncle, Clint Barlow.
Speed Gibson of the International Secret Police. Barlow, one of the youngest, most brilliant, and trusted men in the International Secret Police, has just brought a spectacular criminal case to a successful conclusion. Now he is about to go on a well-earned vacation, and we find him in his rooms with Speed Gibson, his orphaned 15-year-old nephew whom he is raising. He has his hands full, for Speed is the typical American boy, interested in shortwave radio, aviation, and most of all, in the International Secret Police. Because of Speed's interest in the organization and his evident aptitude, Clint has been teaching him as many rules and regulations of the secret police as he could without violating his oath of secrecy. As a result, Speed looks on crime as the height of weakness, failure, and cowardice, and has determined to do his part to end it. His admiration for his uncle and his work drives Speed on to study everything useful to a member of the secret police, for he is determined to join that organization and work with Clint. At the moment, however, Speed is working on a model of the China Clipper while Clint is reclining on the couch, snowed under with travel folders.
Oh boy. This is the life. Nothing in the world to do but decide where to go on a vacation. Hey, let's see now. Here's Palm Springs, Miami, the mountains. Hey, Speed, where would you like to go best?
China.
China? Hey, look here, fella. I can only get away for about a week or 10 days. Be reasonable.
What's that, Uncle Clint?
Oh, no, you didn't hear a word I said. Come back from wherever you are and listen to me, will you? This is important.
Gee, I'm sorry, Clint. But when I get working on this Clipper model, I forget about everything else around me.
You imagine you're actually flying in it, huh? I suppose I yanked you back from Wake Island when I asked you where we ought to go for our vacation.
No, I believe it was Midway.
Say, Speed, with your imagination, you could stay right in this room and fly all over the world.
Yeah, but I'd a lot rather really fly, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you know flying is my middle name. I've had enough traveling for a while. What I want to find now is a nice, quiet place where there's nothing to do but rest.
Oh, heck, that's no fun.
Well, maybe not for you, but it's fun for me. On my vacation, I'm going to do nothing but enjoy the beauties of nature.
No. Someone's at the door.
So I hear. See who it is, Speed. It's anyone for me, tell them I've gone to China.
Okay. Oh, it's Barney.
Hello, kid. Is the mastermind at home?
Yeah, he's on the couch trying to find a vacation spot where he can do nothing but admire the beauties of nature.
Well, he don't have to go away on a vacation to do that as long as he's got me around.
Oh, say, when you come around, I see nothing but trouble. Now, you better not tell me that you've just come from headquarters and that the chief wants to see me about another job.
Can't a guy drop in for a friendly visit without being accused of everything under the sun?
I'm glad you came, Barney. Look at my Clipper model.
Say, that's a beaut, kid. First thing we know, you'll be piloting one of them Clipper planes across the water.
Maybe. But I'm going to be in the secret police like Clint and you. That's why I've been studying all the rules and regulations and asking you and Clint so many questions.
Well, you've got a flair for it, all right, Speed. But you know, it's the hardest work a man can do.
I'll say it is. Especially when you're in the strong arm division like me. That's what you want to work for, kid.
Oh, is that so? Oh, listen, you big ox. Brains will get you out of many a fix that brawn never could.
I thought I'd get you off of that couch sooner or later.
The first time he's been off is his breakfast, Barney.
And you'll notice I didn't use any muscles getting him off either. It was brains. Who was it said he had the brains and me the brawn for our partnership, huh?
Both have plenty of both, if you ask me. I don't know what that's going to leave me when I start working with you.
Oh, now don't worry, Speed. You have youth, a fresh viewpoint. We've been in the game so long, we're apt to get in a rut. You'll be able to see many things that we may overlook.
Well, now that that's all settled, is there anything to eat in this place?
No, but that's an idea. What do you say you go out and buy some food and bring it back here?
Oh, yeah? If I get food, I should come back here with it.
Oh, please, Barney.
Can I go on your vacation with you if I do?
Nothing doing. I see enough of you when I'm working with you. I want to rest in peace.
Yeah. If it wasn't for me, you'd have been resting in peace long ago. I've gotten you out of plenty of scrapes. Why the time...
All right. Now, yes, I admit that I couldn't breathe if it weren't for you. But if you'll only forget the past and stop talking shop. I'm on my vacation, my boy, even if I am still at home.
I bet you'll stay at home, too, Clint. The chief will have a new case for you before we can get away.
He will not, because we're leaving tonight.
Where are you going?
I don't know yet. And I do know it'll be someplace where headquarters can't reach me.
Uh-oh.
So you're going on a vacation, huh?
Answer it, Speed, and say I'm not here.
But Clint...
Answer it.
Hello? Oh, hello, sir. Yeah, he's here. It's for you, Clint. It's the chief.
Speaks well for your training, Clint. The kid won't lie even for you.
No, sir. Hello, chief. Yes, we're leaving tonight.
Gee, but it's another big job. I wish you'd take it.
What's that, chief? Oh, now look here, sir. You promised me a vacation, and I'm going to hold you to that promise. Well, if something's up, let the other boys handle it. Why, sure, you're plenty of good men. Yes. But no. Yes. No.
I wish he'd make up his mind.
Shh, I want to hear.
Oh, yes, I can reach Barney Dunlap for you. He's right here. What's that, chief? You want Speed?
Gee, the chief wants me.
Write down and listen.
Oh, no, I can't do that, sir. I'm very sorry, but... Oh, yes, I'll send Barney over, but don't count on me. And certainly not Speed. What's that, Chief? The octopus. I'll be right over. Yes, sir.
What's on the fire, Clint?
What'd the Chief want me for, Clint?
The vacation's off, Speed. Come on, Barney. We gotta get down to headquarters right away. The octopus gang's at work again.
The octopus gang? Suffering Wang Doodles. Where to now?
Hong Kong. Oh, where's my tie? Where's that comb?
Here they are, Clint. Well, what's the octopus gang?
It's the worst criminal gang in modern history, Speed. No one has ever seen the leader, the octopus, but his organization covers the earth, exactly like the tentacles of a giant octopus. He's diabolical, a genius of evil, with a brain so brilliant that he has successfully eluded every effort made by Scotland Yard, the French Sûreté, and even our own secret police.
Gee, he's sure public enemy number one then, isn't he?
Kid, from all I've heard of him, he's a super colossal public enemy number one.
Yes, and his power is constantly growing. He must be trapped. It'll be our biggest job, Barney.
I'm ready for it, buddy.
Come on, then. The chief naturally didn't give me any details on the case over the phone. He just mentioned the octopus, but that was enough for me.
But what about me, Clint? The chief mentioned me, too, didn't he?
Oh, yes, Speed, but he had the wrong idea. Haven't time to tell you now. I will when I get back.
Oh, no, Clint. Let me go with you, please.
Now, Speed, what's the most important thing a member of the secret police must know?
How to obey orders.
Well, then, as your superior officer, I order you to remain here until we get back.
Yes, sir.
And carry on with the China Clipper while we're gone, fella.
Gee, Barney, how can I work on a clipper model when there's something really big in the air?
Well, kid, I don't know.
Wonder what the chief wanted with me. Oh, doggone
it. So long, kid. I'll bring some food back.
Clint always says how fine I'm doing in the secret police studies. But when I maybe get a chance to do some real work, what happens? I gotta stay home. No adventures could ever happen here at home. Now what? Oh, hello.
Does Clint Barlow hang out here?
Clint Barlow? Why, he's not here.
Oh, no. Don't try shutting the door in my face. If he ain't here, that's fine. I'll just come in and wait. But not long enough for him to get back.
Who are you?
Just call me Blackie if you must call me something. Nice little joint Barlow's got here.
Well, what do you want with my uncle?
Listen, I didn't come here to answer no questions, see? Just keep out of my way and you won't get hurt. But don't bother me none.
I won't, but I gotta make a few phone calls.
Keep away from that phone if you want to stay healthy.
Well, I...
And speaking of phones, your uncle was talking on that one just a few minutes ago, wasn't he?
I don't know.
You don't, huh? And I'll tell you, he was and I wasn't here. Barlow was chinning with his chief about the octopus gang.
Octopus? That's a kind of fish, isn't it?
Sometimes. Play dumb if you want, Speed Gibson, but you ain't fooling nobody. I heard the chief talking to Barlow about you.
You heard him?
Yeah, your phone wire's tapped. I didn't learn much, but what I did hear made me kind of curious. I saw Barlow and his pal leave, so I thought I'd mosey in and learn some more.
Well, who are
Never
you?
Never mind. I'm going to take a look around. Maybe I'll find something that'll tell me more than you can.
Hey, keep away from that desk.
Who says so? Sit down and shut up.
Keep your hands off those things.
You keep away from me or I'll fix it so you won't worry about what I'm doing here. What's that on the table?
My clipper ship.
Yeah? I suppose your Uncle Clint made it for you.
No, I made it. It's just like the real one. The body's real heavy. I weighted it so as it'd have perfect balance.
I ain't interested in clipper ships.
Well, here's one that'll be interesting to you. Oh. Golly, I knocked him cold.
Hey, Steve,
let us in.
You
have your lock on this door.
Yeah, I forgot my hat.
Suffering wang doodles. Who's this guy? Somebody's put him on ice. And look at Speed's clipper model. It's wrecked.
Yeah, I ruined it.
Who is this man?
He was looking through all your papers in the desk here. And he knew about you talking with the chief about the octopus gang. Said he'd tapped our wires.
Let me get the handcuffs on him.
Did I do the wrong thing, Clint?
The wrong thing? Why, you're the best man of the three of us. Come on, get your coat, Speed. You've got to come along and deliver your prisoner.
What?
If the chief doesn't make you a bona fide member of the secret police for this, I'll eat Barney's hat. Speed, you're the first person who's ever captured an octopus gangster. Come on, let's get to headquarters.
You just heard the very first episode of the old-time radio show, Speed Gibson of the International Secret Police, as requested by our guests tonight, Dennis and Rhonda Wright, owners of the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum in Sutherland, Oregon. Speed Gibson aired weekly, sometimes very weekly, from 1937 through 1940, and most likely caused World War II. You can visit the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum next time you're in Sutherland, or you can check them out on their website, radiodaysmuseum.com. And if you like what you see and hear and want to support the preservation of radio history, you can visit their GoFundMe page, Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum. Well, that's all for this episode of the Holy Crowley Hour. If there's even the slightest possibility you like what you heard, you can tune in every fourth Monday of the month from 11 p.m. to midnight, and you can stream previous episodes from our Holy Crowley Hour page on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/Holy Crowley Hour. Many thanks to our guest tonight,
Dennis and Rhonda Wright, owners of the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum in Sutherland, Oregon. And big thanks to Crowley Cult member and Holy Crowley Hour producer, Jason Harder, and to our resident master of the mixing board, Liam Delta, for engineering tonight's show. I'm your host, Ken Jones, saying see you all again next month, Monday, September 23rd, 2019 at 11 p.m. Our guest will be one of the very best in the field of radio drama, Dirk Maggs, direct from his home in the UK. In the meantime, I'll be heading outside the KBOO studios to catch a ride back to Carl Crowley headquarters in Beaverton, where Carl and I will both be enlisting in the International Secret Police. But please keep it to yourself. Good night, everyone. Coming up next is Faraway Places with Joe Woods, who would really like to get his hands on one of those Lone Ranger frontier towns, despite the fact breakfast cereal plays havoc with his digestive system.
Extra! Extra! Read all about it!
Hey, what's all the excitement?
Take a look at this headline. It says, Greatest Offer in Cheerios History, Now Ready.
What offer is that?
Why, it's the Lone Ranger Frontier Town. You see, the makers of Cheerios are offering every boy and girl an exact scale model of Lone Ranger Frontier Town.
You mean the very same town we've been hearing about in the Lone Ranger program?
Absolutely. Scale models of the very same buildings and places made famous by the Lone Ranger and Tonto. Same bridges, mines, cabins, forts, and other things you hear about on the Lone Ranger radio program. 71 different models in all. Each stands by itself. Each extra easy to cut out and assemble.
Golly, 71 different models.
You get models of Desert View Lookout Tower, Wells Fargo Express Office, Frontier Stagecoach, Bright Lights Cafe, Slim Saddle Shop, Old Spanish Fort, Judge Nutt's House, Union Pacific Railroad Station, and many, many more.
Boy, oh boy, how do you get them?
Tell you in a minute, but first, listen to this. You also get a super special model of the Lone Ranger's secret hideout. This hideout has a concealed entrance known only to the Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Oh, jeepers, a scale model of the Lone Ranger's secret hideout. Boy, that's terrific.
No, wait, you haven't heard anything yet. Because in addition to all these swell models, you also get an authentic ground plan and picture map of Lone Ranger Frontier Town. There are four different maps, each covering a different section of town. Maps show where to place each model, and also show in full color all the different mountains, rivers, and trails. Famous places like Quicksand Gulch, Rustler's Cave, Powderhound River, Hidden Valley, and lots, lots more.
Oh, gee. With those maps, you can follow the action of the Lone Ranger program right in your own home.
You bet you can. And now, here's how you get the first section of your Lone Ranger frontier town, complete with picture maps and buildings. Listen. Send only 10 cents together with your plainly printed name and address and one Cheerios box top to Green Hornet, Box 900, New York City.
Boy, I want one of those Lone Ranger frontier towns, bud, quick.
Quick is the way you'd better act, too. You and all the fellas and girls listening. Because this amazing offer is going like crazy. So don't wait. Order today. Here's the address again. Send Cheerios Box Top, no matter what's printed on top, plus 10 cents, no stamps, please. Mail to Green Hornet, Box 900, New York City. Offer good in USA for a short time only. Send today.